This meeting is called to order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for a moment of silent meditation. Thank you. Yeah, first agenda item is recognitions. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Nolan to introduce the presenters.
If I could ask Mr. Blyberg to come up. Mr. Blyberg? And Mr. Butel, about 60 to 70 pounds less of a man than he was. Good for you.
Good evening. Thank you very much for allowing us to present to you tonight two very special athletic teams who had very successful fall seasons, and we felt it only fitting for them to have board recognition tonight. The first team, and we'd like to call up the coach of our girls' Eastfield hockey team, Ms. Tina Moon, to join us. And before Coach Moon introduces you to the members of her team, I'd just like to go over some team highlights this year and some outstanding individual performances that took place over the course of the season. The team highlights: undefeated regular season for the second straight year, New York State Scholar Athlete Team, which is probably the best of all. They were league champions, conference champions, Division I champions, Suffolk County champions, Long Island champions, Southeastern Regional champions, and New York State finalists. I had an opportunity to escort the ladies upstate to Syracuse, and the Board of Education and its community should be very proud of the way the girls conducted themselves under Mrs. Moon's leadership. They represented Sachem in a first-class manner, and although they fell a little bit short of their goal this year, for the last 3 years they've been probably the top program in New York State, and it's a tribute to the coaches and to the kids in the program. A couple of the girls who just had extremely outstanding seasons, not to single people out, but I just think it's worth noting. Katie Dougherty was named to the All-Long Island Field Hockey Team. Right now, Katie's leading the girls over Brentwood right now at East. I just left it up by 15 points going into the fourth quarter. Katie just scored her 1,000th point in basketball the other night. And today in Newsday, she was named as a finalist or nominated for the McDonald's All-American game. There's only 7 girls in Suffolk County that were named. And there's only 100 in the country that get named, and they whittle that list down to 24 that get selected to play on April 2nd in Chicago. So we're keeping our fingers crossed, but that's a great representation for Katie Dougherty, who had a great year. Our next one is Kara Trombetta. She was named to the All-Long Island team, All-Long Island All-Regional All-American, and then Katie Trombetta, Newsday All-Long Island Player of the Year for the second year in a row, All-Region All-American, first-team All-American, and she received a full athletic scholarship to play field hockey at the University of Michigan next year. So that's just some of the highlights from the team and some of the outstanding individuals this year. And now I'll have Coach Moon introduce those young ladies who are with us tonight. Girls, when your name is announced, please come up front, receive a certificate from Mr. Butel, and if you could stand in front of the board until all the girls have been mentioned. Thank you.
Tiffany Arena. Kristen Cole. Jessica D'Angelo. Lori Engelken. Destiny Holder. Cameron Kazanecki. Kyle Larkin. Danielle Lucas. Nicole Morin. Alexa Neary. Mika Shebabine. Katie Shanahan. Karen Trombetta. Katie Trombetta. Jessica Vai. Renee Salerno. And Gabby Placino. Congratulations, girls. I couldn't be more proud as a coach. Thank you. Love you guys. Last one. Sorry, Taylor Diodato. Her name was missing. I love you, Taylor. And Courtney Coop. One-eyed Sally.
Ladies, some of you can step on that on the step up, so get a little closer so I can get a picture of you guys. Do you guys want to get up there?
No.
I don't know. They haven't been getting up all recently. All right, guys, everybody's looking at me. I'm going to take a couple pictures just like that, guys. A couple more times. That's great. Nice big smiles. Two more times. One more. Thank you, guys.
Certificates are in here, so they're all the place.
Now it's our pleasure to introduce the second team for recognition tonight. And at that, this time, we'd like to ask Mr. Bill Kropp to please join us up at the head table. And again, I'd like to just do some of the team highlights from this year, and then I'll turn it over to Coach Kropp. The East Boys volleyball team was a New York State Scholar Athlete team. As I mentioned before, that's probably first and foremost. They're doing it in the classroom, and they're doing it out on the court. They were league champions, Suffolk County champions, Long Island champions, Southeast Regional champions, and New York State finalists. Mr. Butel escorted the team upstate for their championship run, and he came back and reported how great the boys and coach acted up there representing the Sachem community and school district, so we could not be proud of their accomplishments. Coach Kropp, sitting next to me, was named as Newsday's Coach of the Year, which is a tremendous honor. And a couple highlights from his team. Tyler Jones was all Long Island and all state. Joe Licata was named as Suffolk County Defensive Player of the Year. And Ryan Cole was all Long Island, all state, Suffolk County MVP, and Suffolk County Outstanding Player. And now I'll let Coach Kropp introduce the players of his team. Guys, when your name's mentioned, just like the girls did, please come up and get your certificate from Mr. Butel and remain standing in front of the board.
Thank you very much. Just before I introduce my team, I'd like to, as I see we are Sachem, I'd like to give a shout-out to Sachem North boys volleyball team that finished the regular season undefeated, ranked number one in the county going into the playoffs, and Matt Rivera was named Suffolk County Coach of the Year. So Sachem North and their program, to have Sachem as a whole, having the two best teams in the county and probably in the state, I think that just gives a great feel of where volleyball is going in the district. So congratulations, Sachem North. First, I'd like to introduce our three captains, Senior Ryan Cole, Senior Captain Tyler Jones, Senior Captain Mike Barfield. All three were also named All-County. Sean Harrington, Jr., Matt Erickson, Sr., Stephen Rodriguez, Jr., Tom Mitchell, Sr., Joe Licata, Jr., Kyle Biggers, sophomore. Joe Russo, junior. Richard Mitchell, junior. Matthew Cole, sophomore. And number one in our hearts and number one in the class at Sachem East and accepted to Harvard, Anmol Gupta. I would also like to, this is just not a me thing, it's a we thing, and I'd like to bring up my coaches, Damon Gallo and Rob Regan. Thank you very much. Thank you, board, for recognizing us.
Just grab a picture of the guy.
Okay.
Guys, some of you guys can stand on the back ledge. And we can, not all of you guys. All right, guys, everybody's looking right here at me. I'm going to take about six pictures, guys. Just like that, a couple more times. Nice big smiles, guys. Just like that. Two more times. One more, guys. Thank you guys very much.
It brings us to our visitor section. Carol, any visitors? No visitors tonight? Okay.
Don't jinx it. You know what? I don't see them.
We have one presentation tonight. It's the EAP Assistance Program. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Nolan to introduce the presenter.
If I could ask Laura Grossman to come up. You have to. You know, as most of you know, this past year was a rather challenging year, and I still believe in my heart that despite all the challenges and changes that have taken place, it's still a phenomenal place. And Laura and Jocelyn is here with her. Jocelyn's part of many of our EAP committees. Laura's just going to present a little bit because behind the scenes they do tremendous work to help our employees, their families, so on and so forth. And you know, one of the toughest parts is change, and just, you know, human nature. People are not good with change of any kind. So as we begin 2014, a new year with great optimism and certainly gratitude for all the many blessings we have here, Laura's just going to explain a little bit about, and Jocelyn, about what we're going to do moving forward, you know, helping people to cope with change.
And I just would like to add on, for those of you who don't know Laura, she's actually been our representative from the Employee Assistance Program that's run through Eastern Suffolk BOCES since we signed on to the service in 2001. She is a licensed clinical social worker, and she's also the program supervisor for the EAP program out of BOCES.
Thank you. I have a little bit of a cold, so I'm going to usually have a big mouth, but I'm going to use this microphone today. I just want to start by saying that was very impressive, what we just saw here with those kids, and that is really what everything is all about. So I was really happy that I got to be here tonight to see that. So as Jim said, I just want to talk to you a little bit about change, because as we all know, this year has been one of a lot of change in the field of education, you know, having to deal with APPR and the Common Core academic standards, all the stressors that have gone on economically that have impacted us regionally and locally, dealing with, you know, the tax cap, enrollment changes, you know, all types of things like that, unfunded mandates. All of us are dealing with a lot of change. So many of the districts that the, including yours, that EAP works with, are trying to explore solutions to help people deal with these challenges. And as they're doing that, there's a lot of things like rumor mills and, you know, like a lot of different kinds of things that people are hearing, factual, sometimes not factual, that staff are having to deal increasingly, and I've been hearing this in talking with all the different district committees, increasingly dealing with due to change or anticipated change or perceived change, a lot of stress and anxiety that, you know, typically would come along with that type of situation. So in an effort to assist the administrative staff to help the staff here in the district to, you know, be able to thrive and deal with the challenges that are, you know, we are continuing to face, the EAP, and that being me, is providing the Coping with Change workshop. I've provided it in December to the supervisor staff, and I'll be providing it on Monday to the administrative staff to give them some insight into the psychological and biological aspects of change so that they can, you know, hopefully help the employees be proactive to get through whatever's coming down the road. So I wanted to go over some of the key features with you briefly just to help you to understand some of the things I'll be covering in those workshops. And I did provide you with some handouts. One of them has the five-step change process. You'll see where it says step one about resistance. So some of the things that I think that are really key for people to understand in helping people to deal with change and dealing with it themselves is that everyone goes through change differently, and it's very similar to when people are dealing with the grieving process. We're all aware that if somebody experiences a loss, a death of someone that they care about, that they're going to go through a process of shock and denial and anger and different types of things until they get to the stage of acceptance. And for everyone, as they go through that, they experience it differently. For some, the length they go through, the intensity of reaction they have is different. And it's very much the same thing with the change process. The only difference is that we, most of us, I think, are aware that there is a grieving process, so that if we see somebody in the workplace or in our personal lives that has just experienced a loss of some kind, we would expect them to be doing things like maybe crying, maybe feeling some out of sorts to some degree, not being their typical selves. So, yes, in the workplace, we're still expected to do our jobs, but we may approach them a little differently or have a little different understanding of what they're going through. Most of us, however, do not know that when people are going through a change or there's an anticipated change that from their own perception is stretching their comfort zone in any way and or creating a perceived threat, that people go through universally a five-step change process. And I gave you that handout that gives you a little more in-depth information. But the first step of that process is resistance. And when people are in the stage of resistance, a lot of times they're really feeling a loss of control and a real lack of confidence because they're feeling very vulnerable. They don't understand what's going on. They haven't, you know, really seen the successful positive aspects of the change. They don't know how it's going to impact them. So what ends up happening oftentimes is that resistance is similar to in the grieving process initially when people go through shock and denial. That allows them to then deal with emotional pain that they're not yet ready to deal with, and resistance gives an illusion of empowerment. You can kind of look at it like that to help people when they're feeling this loss of control and lacking of confidence. But unfortunately, what happens is in that stage, oftentimes, people appear as though they're uncooperative, they're not team players, or they're the difficult people. And in reality, they're going through a normal human reaction when the change or anticipated change is stretching their comfort zone and or creating a perceived threat. And the threat could even be something like, you know, do I have time to do this? So it's important for people to understand that, especially from a supervisory capacity when interacting. And the next stage of the change process, and I'm only going to talk about the first two, is uncertainty. And in that stage, what happens is now people have let go of the resistance, and they're feeling very, very vulnerable. And a lot of times they have a lot more questions than answers. So they're in a very vulnerable state. And what happens oftentimes then is that they start experiencing stress reactions or anxiety reactions to the change and or the coming change, the anticipated change. And that's where we get into the biology of stress and anxiety. And I handed you out two pictures that focus on the brain. One is called the limbic brain, and the other has a picture that shows you more of the brain and focuses on the prefrontal cortex. So I just wanted to tell you real briefly about that aspect, and I talk a lot about that in our committee meetings as well, because when a person is going through, and change can frequently, or anticipated change, again, produce that stress or anxiety reaction, what ends up happening is the survival wiring in our brain kicks off and a variety of different processes begin to occur. So in understanding that, if you look at the picture that I gave you with the limbic brain that shows the amygdala in there, the limbic brain is really our primitive brain, and it's the brain that we carry with us from the days of the caveman. So if you think of that, what the caveman dealt with, it was all about survival all the time. How are they going to eat? How are they going to survive? You know, shelter, you know, dealing with the wild animals, things like that. So that part of our brain is literally set up as our survival wiring. And in that part of our brain is the amygdala, which you see in that picture. And that's the amygdala's sole job is really to survey the internal and external environment to determine if there is a life and death threat so it can prepare us physically and mentally for survival, for fight, flight, and freeze, which is very important if there is actually a threat. However, one of the things about the amygdala is it's notorious for being inaccurate. So a lot of times, especially the stress and anxiety reactions that people experience in relation to change, set off the amygdala, which then sets off a number of different processes. And one of the first things that happens once that survival wiring gets set off is a process that I call going limbic. And what that means is that it starts to shut down various systems in our body that we really don't require when we, you know, when we're trying to survive. So one of those is our digestive system, but another one of those things is our immune system. And that's why it's really important for people to understand this, because that's why people get sick often when they're dealing with significant and or chronic stress. So part of the process that people go through and understanding this helps them to be empowered to kind of stop this process from happening and be able to get back to equilibrium physically, mentally, and emotionally is that they start to experience their muscles tensing, then they experience their heart beating faster, then their breathing changes to accommodate the increased heart rate and the need for more oxygen, and lastly, their adrenal glands start spewing the hormones of adrenaline. And one of those hormones is cortisol, which is known as our stress hormone. And that is its main function during survival is to suppress our immune system. So by understanding the biology, there are strategies that really help people, and I use it with them often, and I teach it in this workshop, Coping with Change, to actually stop the process in its tracks before the cortisol gets spewed. Because one of the other things that happens when we're going through this going limbic process is one of the things we do not need when we're trying to survive is the other picture you have, the prefrontal cortex. That is our rational brain. That's our evolved brain. And we don't need to be thinking rationally when we're in survival crisis mode. So, you know, you don't want to be analyzing things. You want to be able to be quick and reactive. So what happens when we start going through this limbic process is not only are all these biological things happening, but that part of our brain is now getting literally shut off. So that part of our brain is the part of our brain that develops when we're about 25 or 26 years old, and it's responsible for the executive functions, which are our rational thinking, our judgment, planning, problem-solving, and decision-making. So when we're going about our regular business and, you know, people are thinking about or worrying about the changes to come or being impacted by the various changes, now they've got all this biological stuff going on with their immune system being affected. And that limbic part of our brain is connected literally to every organ, every nerve in our body. But the rational part of our brain, the evolved brain, is only connected to our limbic brain. So that limbic brain now shuts it off, and now we're walking around unable to fully engage or at all engage our rational brain and having to deal, you know, with still doing our jobs and interacting with people. So from the time that amygdala perceives that there is a threat of life and death, literally we have 18 minutes from the time that happens to the time that our adrenal glands spew out the adrenaline. And if we don't catch it prior to that happening, then it takes a minimum of 24 minutes before those hormones reabsorb into our muscles so that we can then be functioning and start to reengage our rational brain again. So if you think about it, there's people walking around now who their immune system's not functioning properly and they're not using the rational part of their brain. When that rational part of our brain gets disengaged, one of the things, the last thing that happens to us in this going limbic process is that we go through what's called a cognitive regression. So that's how we perceive things, our coping skills, and the wisdom kind of that we've gleaned over the years. And so when we go through the cognitive regression, immediately, no matter what age we are, we regress to the age of 18 years old in our cognitive functioning. And no insult to anybody who might be in the audience, but, you know, we don't have our fully developed rational brain at that time until we're 25 or 26. So if you think about how an 18-year-old is using judgment and decision-making skills and the coping and wisdom that they have in those years, you know, it's not the same as we would have walking around doing our jobs every day. So there's a continuum that we have when we're talking about the cognitive regression, and it has to deal with anger and anxiety. So it goes from irritation to anger to rage, and it goes from worry to anxiety to panic. And the further down we go down that continuum, the further down we regress in our functioning. So the closer we get to rage or panic, the closer we are to actually being regressed to the age of 2 years old or less. And that's why sometimes when people are so stressed or so anxious or so angry, enraged, that they actually don't know what to do. They get immobilized, which is the freeze part of the fight, flight, and freeze, and they actually get in their bed and they can't even do anything. So it's kind of like, you know, when somebody's in that state, it's kind of like having a young child that's left in Manhattan by themselves with no adults, and they have no resources, no coping strategies, and they're, you know, they're really left feeling very panicky and vulnerable. So understanding all of this information, and this is just a little piece of what I teach, but I think it's one of the most important parts to understand, because again, a lot of times people are walking around getting sick. They are, you know, getting into interactional difficulties. They may be being perceived as being difficult or uncooperative, when in reality, they're going through something that just some simple strategies that we share in the workshop, and maybe this might also open up, you know, food for thought for the administrative and supervisor staff to be able to also think of some strategies that they can utilize to assist the employees and themselves as you continue to go through the changes and the challenges of, you know, these times with, you know, the fiscal situation and some of the uncertainties that we're dealing with now, that understanding this will really be an empowering tool, I think, to help people and to help the staff. So that's basically what the workshop is about.
You alluded to it a little bit at the end, but are we doing anything for our managers, supervisors, department chairs, to include them in that managing change process and really effectuating change effectively? And are we bringing them into
that's,
that?
That's the group that Laura is going to begin to meet with and work with.
Okay.
Any other questions? Actually, it was my question. I was hesitant to pick them, but he did ask my question.
Oh, okay.
You have a schedule of when you're going to meet with the individuals? Are you meeting them with these individuals, small groups or large groups?
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, we have a meeting coming up next week.
It's Monday. Yep,
right.
Monday morning.
And that's going to be really the large group. It's going to be the principals and, you know.
Okay.
And the supervisors. Right.
Already had our training.
Okay.
In December.
Okay. You know, the one thing I can say, and I'm glad Jocelyn mentioned this earlier because Laura is being very humble. Really, she's been a huge asset to our district. And like we've said many times, we've gone through tremendous, tremendous changes this year in particular, all happening at once is the perfect storm. But it's gratifying to see when people do take the time to think about this and try to be as rational as they can and work together. And, you know, even with our work with the Seven Habits and you know, we talk about all the time becoming empathic listeners and seeking first to understand. It really does help. And, you know, I can see it even the other day I was over at Grundy and, you know, Mr. Nicosia continues to encourage me to go and meet with the students from the different buildings. Even they were talking about change and things being difficult, but, you know, trying to be understanding and good listeners. And, you know, I've said this before. I think sometimes we are our own worst enemies here, because I will still compare us to any place on the planet, but sometimes in the middle of all these changes and difference of opinion and so on and so forth, we do become our own worst enemies. So I can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And I appreciate you giving me the time to be here. So
I want to thank you for coming out in this cold weather and updating us on what's going
pleasure.
On.
Thank you so much. I got to see those kids getting the awards, and that was good. Okay, thanks.
Okay, section 5 on the agenda is we have personal items. We have consent agenda for personal items 5A1 through 5C4. Any motion, please? Mike Cerny, second by Sal Trippi. Questions and discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Item 6, action items. Approval of the 2014 CHM extended school year calendar. Okay, motion, please? Mike Cerny, second by Terry Ahern. Questions and discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Item 6.2, approval of salary increase for substance abuse counselors. Motion, please. Mike Timo, second by Sal Trippi. Questions or discussion? Doug?
Bruce or Gail, how come this is separate from item 6.6?
The list that the board last had was their actual salary, because they don't earn an hourly wage. So normally when individuals...
This is a group that is not a part of a bargaining unit?
Correct, Doug. This is a non-aligned group of employees, and therefore they're not part of a collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to... I was against this in the back room. I'll be against it out here. Item 6.2 and 6.6, it's not that I don't think these folks deserve a raise or that I'm necessarily opposed to this raise. This is something that the board should decide prior to budget season. It should be included in the budget, as opposed to done after the budget's adopted and finding money somewhere. So this is not like it's a collective bargaining group. This is something if the board decides they're going to have a 1% raise, that's what they're getting. And there's no reason the board can't do that prior to adopting the budget as opposed to after. So I am against items 6.2 and 6.6 for those reasons.
Okay. Any other questions, discussion? Okay, I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? One opposition? Motion's carried. M63, approval of translators and interpreters for the 13-14 school year. Any motion, please? Mike Latimo, second by Mike Asernia. Questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. M64, approval of coaching assignments for the winter 2013-14 school year. Motion, please? Mike Timo, second by Mike Asernia. Questions or discussions on this item? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Item 6.5, approval of budget transfers of $50,000 or greater. Motion, please. Mike attorney was motion. Second. Sal Trippi. Okay, questions? Bruce, just one question I have. Transfer for $13,517,000 for leave replacements. Could you just explain exactly what that is? Because
if you recall a few years back when we broke out the buildings and the staffing, so it would have two kindergarten teachers and five first grade teachers, because once Gail's office knows what the budgeting number is, we put it all on the bottom so we don't unnecessarily stress out people, because even though we might be going one less, it might not be that exact staff member until Gail, and there are different rules for instructional and non-instructional staff.
So it doesn't appear in a budget line.
Correct.
From the onset,
because
you kind of put it somewhere in the transfer.
The staffing implication is much different than the budgetary implication.
Okay.
We agree on the whole dollar numbers. Then Gail's office says who it's going to be affected. So we changed this maybe 3 or 4 years ago, mm-hmm. not to get people upset, because it might not be that person after they go through that accessing.
I just, like I said, the number really jumped out. And
right.
There wasn't the explanation in the packet that I saw.
It's the very last number in the budget.
Okay.
It affected about 250 people.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Item 6.6, approval of salary increase for non-aligned employees. Any motion, please? Mike Isernia, second by Sal Trippi. Questions or discussion? Okay, Doug.
Bruce, just for confirmation, this is unbudgeted money, correct?
Correct.
Mike Isernia.
Bruce, just so everybody's clear, that this, the total amount that this increase represents is about $20,000?
Correct.
And a half of that is covered already by the monies we've been receiving from child care?
Correct.
And we're on the next item, 6.8, we're going to realize about $48,000 in unanticipated revenue?
That's unbudgeted also. That's correct.
So that go back on the revenue side. So we would cover everything that's concerned with these two items?
We'd be to the good for $38,000.
Thank you.
Mike, you said half is recognized as
out of the $20,000, $10,000 is for the child care workers.
Okay. Any other comments, questions?
Yeah, I have.
Mr. Falco?
Going forward, I'm going to approve this, but in light of what Doug has been saying, and I agree with this, that we should not be spending money that we have not budgeted for. Mm-hmm. I realize the bottom line is going to be a positive because we're receiving extra income, but it's money we did not budget. That increase that we're going to get from wherever funds are going to come from could be used to add programs or add staff, which we're not doing with paying for something that we did not budget for. So I'm going to vote yes, but I'm certainly against this trend of finding money and paying for salary increases.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? One opposition? Motion's carried. Item 6.7, recommendations from the Committee on Special Education. Motion, please. Mike Isernia, second. Mike Timo. Questions or discussions on this item? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Item 6.8, approval agreement with StarQuest International. Any motion, please? Okay. Mike Isernia, second. Mike Timo. Questions or discussion? Bruce, if you could, I know we got this late yesterday, the contract came back, I guess, from the legal counsel. Could you just kind of explain what this is?
Sure. A few months ago, StarQuest contacted us. They were in East Islip Schools. East Islip didn't want to contract with them, and this was unbelievable. And so I'm watching the Thanksgiving parade on that Thursday morning, and who shows up on the middle of it is StarQuest, and the title from NBC, America's Largest Dance Studio. I actually texted Marianne, like, in the middle, and she was working on this contract, that these young girls are on television right now if she turns on Channel 4. But since that time, they weren't getting responses from any of the other schools. We discussed it a couple of months ago at $8,000 a day to use, and that's for the rehearsals and the actual dance performance. And as Mike indicated, this is unbudgeted. And staff is already going to be on for these days, custodial, maintenance. We're not handing over the building to them. They're just using it like anybody else. They have their own insurance. Their parents actually coordinate with the activities. They provide their own security. Imagine these are large events for these young girls.
And our security will be involved in our
right. That's part. We had many conversations with StarQuest that we're not handing over the building to them. It's still our building, our security, our maintenance, our custodians handling East. But they were more. They're actually out of Atlanta, Georgia. More than appreciative that we're willing to accommodate. This is a countywide dance competition.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? I have a motion. Yep, Mike Timo.
Yeah, Bruce, I think that this is it's a good opportunity for us. I know that my grandchildren participate in the thing that goes on over at the Stoller Center over at Stony Brook, and they do something very, very similar. I don't know what the rate is that they charge or Stony Brook gets, but there's some of the rules that they have in place, and hopefully we'll do the same. They protect that facility like I can't tell you, including no refreshments, and it's really, really very, very well protected for Stony Brook, Stoller, and hopefully we'll have the same kinds of rules in place that'll protect our facility. So, but I think it's a great opportunity for us to make a few extra bucks.
And speaking to the gentleman who's the New York representative, this is only the beginning. If this is successful for them, they're going to broaden it to use Sachem Schools for a larger area. This is a national company. So they would bring in other dance troupes the smaller dance schools within their group. So as we're saying right now, it's $48,000. I could see it potentially being $100,000 pretty easily because I know the kind of host that we're going to be to them.
Bruce, so we have an opportunity to allow some of our maybe our student clubs.
Absolutely. That was part of
the
deal.
To bring in, you know, to sell refreshments.
The only thing they wanted was the flowers. They said we could handle the refreshments. We could handle if we wanted to. They were good with all that. Okay. So
who's going to be doing the refreshments?
The clubs at East.
Oh, okay. They are?
Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing he had a request was for flowers. I guess there's bigger money in flowers than food.
Yeah, but it creates a revenue source for those.
Absolutely.
Those clubs
that we're going to have student involvement.
Okay, great. Doug, and then back to Dorothy.
I'm sure we did this, but to coordinate with athletics, because if this is as big as you say it is, they're not going to be able to fit anything else in that building.
It absolutely is. They only used dates that Wayne gave them.
Okay.
That we knew was going to be a parking auditorium. Okay. They actually, the girls leave their coats and, you know, change of clothes and to secure those classrooms right off of the auditorium. Okay. Yeah, that was part of the planning.
Dorothy?
Chris, this might be for you. I went through the contract. I think we all looked through it. And just to confirm, there's nothing in there and there's no way that there could be any liability for us if they get hurt while they're there? In the building, the
insurances are in place, and I know Mary Ann reviewed that. Anybody can sue you for anything. You know, walking in here tonight, an attendee at an event can sue you. So I can't say you that no, we can sue you for anything. We would get adequate insurance in anticipation of an event that we would be covered by there.
But they're carrying the insurance,
correct?
Yeah, they have to provide us with a certificate of insurance. Exactly.
Okay.
Their insurance would be the primary.
Correct. I mean, and certainly our insurance is still there and covers events and occurrences on our.
All right. So their insurance is the primary and then ours is the secondary?
Right.
Okay.
Ours would, you know, presume a doomsday scenario. An insurance company goes bankrupt. The certificate was valid when granted, and between the time of a claim, it, you know, does one of those, you know, insolvency. Completely off the face of the planet, we would still have our insurances in place and we would still have legal recourse against them. But their obligation is to provide us with a certificate of insurance that, you know, names us as the additional insured for these events.
Okay, and obviously at the levels we're satisfied.
Yeah, exactly, the levels that were vetted by Mary Ann when she reviewed the contract, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. M69, approval of donation. Mr. Sean Chamberlain, a motion, please. Mike Cerny, second by Sal Trippi. Questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. If we can get a letter out to him, I'd appreciate it. Monthly reports, determinations on the Committee of Preschool Special Education. Any questions on that information? The updates from the Board of Education subcommittees. I know we have some subcommittee members here. Any updates at all?
No, I would have our next meeting next Tuesday. I got some information from Ron about the lunch scenario
okay.
we talked about. And so we didn't call the person in because what he gave us kind of answered most of the questions. Mm-hmm. So I'm figuring where maybe we can add to that to try to publicize it and mm-hmm. get more participation in it.
Just an update to the board.
I read, yeah. They seem to have it covered pretty well. Mm-hmm. But maybe they have some more ideas of what they think he might be able to help.
Okay. The Budget Advisory Committee, one of the things that they were looking at, just to give you guys the board an update, was with our lunch program, trying to generate enough information out in the community so that individuals that would qualify for free and reduced lunch would be able to take advantage of it, try to educate them that it's all done confidentially. And in a sense, it actually lowers our common wealth ratio. Is that correct, Bruce? And opens us up to a tremendous amount more state aid, which could be a revenue source for the district moving forward. So I know that you met with the, you know, the lunch folks.
Well, actually, we didn't meet because I think she had some personal issues uh-huh. at the time, but she did send.
She sent a
paragraph of all the steps they take, and on my initial reading of it, mm-hmm. it seems pretty comprehensive.
Are you still planning to meet with?
Our meeting, we're going to see if anybody has any other questions to bring her in on, maybe ask her what she thinks we can do in addition to what she has. And but they seem to get the word out. Maybe there's some avenues we haven't. You know, at our next meeting, we're going to look into that.
And as directed by the board, you guys are also looking into alternate revenue sources as well.
Yes, we're trying to explore possibilities.
Okay. Any other updates from other any other committee, legislative committee?
Dana? The
legislative branch?
No, at the end of the month there is a presentation on the elimination of the gap elimination act. Are you attending that, Bosie's?
Yes.
So I'll be attending that as well, and we'll see how, as a district, what we can do moving forward to support that.
There is a another event coming up, and it's the Longwood legislative brunch. And I believe Carol registered the Sachem.
Carol,
yeah, I think it was Carol Trulio sent me the email. Yeah, the other Carol. So I don't know if there's anybody from the legislative committee that's interested in coming to that, but basically it's a panel of all of our elected officials where questions from budget to governor's proposals to everything involving education is going to be discussed. And I can get you the date. I believe it's the first week in February, February 9th or 8th, but it's a Saturday morning, usually between 9 and 11 o'clock. And I think, Dana, you went with me once, didn't you?
I've been before,
yeah. Longwood School? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there's anybody from the legislative committee or any board members that want to go to that, please let Carol know right away. It's very informative, and it's a great opportunity to get questions answered from our local officials. Mm-hmm. So any other advisory committees? Updates? All right. Presentations. Bruce, before we go into exec session, I know there was the State of the State address from Governor Cuomo. Many of the board members didn't see it. I'm not sure if many of the people in the audience had seen it, but any vibe from what was discussed, as to where the governor – I know you sent this an email at 7 o'clock, but I didn't even get a chance to open it.
We got the actual from Governor Cuomo's press office, the actual speech. And then there was immediate follow-up for the New York School Board Association doing an analysis. They didn't have the state aid runs. They said probably in 2 weeks we'll get the state aid runs. But education was a high priority. Funding of education. He's coming out with different proposals where homeowners will get a direct New York State tax incentive. Didn't really say how much additional state aid. If we kept the taxes on the 2%, we got additional state aid, then homeowners would get a $250 or $300 tax credit on New York State income taxes. I guess the devil's in the detail as soon as we really find out what he's talking about. But no indication of the gap elimination, which was the biggest number. That was about $4 million. We were hoping he would come out.
There was no discussion?
Not in his speech, no. But he mentions in many different paragraphs the importance of education in New York State. I don't know what that means, but we're still at less state aid than we got in 2008,
yeah.
And those are the facts. Yeah. So we have a ways to go before we get to that, making up that $16 million.
Okay. So as soon as you hear something from the state,
sure.
You can update us on what's going on with that.
Sure.
Any other visitors, Carol? Future discussion items? Tony?
Yes, I had a brief chance to look at the speech that Bruce sent, and in that he mentioned – the governor mentioned that he's going to propose a technology bond in next year. So I'm asking, do we have something in the works that we could, I know we've talked about it. I don't know if it's Jim.
Yeah, we have to submit a plan regardless of that. And he, right. I did happen to watch his speech today, and he mentioned technology. I'm hopeful that will be shared with every district. I was kind of getting the feeling, just based on the examples he was giving, he was, referring to the haves and the have-nots. So once again, I'm thinking, all right, he might be referring to sending a ton of money to New York City or because I think the analogy he made is some kids in their school are constantly on the internet and others don't even have a basketball net. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, so but
we do have a plan, right.
Thank you.
The future discussion items, Dorothy?
Jim, also from what Bruce sent to us, it said something that he's looking at instituting universal pre-K.
Full day.
Full day.
full-day UPK.
How would that affect
them? But yet no mention of full-day kindergarten.
I think that from what I've heard in the past, it's an incentive for districts to have a full-day universal pre-K, but I don't think it's going to be mandatory.
But
I'm hearing.
Well,
I think
I
he's saying he's going to make the funds available.
Yeah, that's what I guess we'll have to find out.
More than likely,
where the funds come from,
a one-year fund, a one-shot fund, and then you'll be on the hook for the remaining part of it.
So would that mean the grant that they give now would not be available?
That was the analysis from the School Board Association. For the technology, it's a one-year shot, and then we have to pay for the rest of the for the balance, and the same thing for kindergarten or pre-K. That it's 1 year. You know, and even on the chart, he was talking about how the finances for this year, but he has a positive growth in the 15-16 school year. The chart right behind him. So where he constantly is talking about we shouldn't be spending money that we don't have, his graphs were not making, were not jiving with the words that he was saying. So, but you know that's what was presented today, and actually even what Tony was saying, the very next sentence on with the computers. Some schools where he visited to have more metal detectors than computers. You know, so we're not in that situation. He's obviously talking about an inner city school. So if the money for technology is targeted to a higher free and reduced or a higher crime area, then it wouldn't come to the suburbs.
Okay.
It's an election year.
Yeah. Any other discussion items, future discussion items? Just the one, and it might even be the same one. Doug had brought up about the capital projects, about the needs of our facilities department and moving forward, what we think they need so that we could budget for it. And Bruce, you came back with something, capital projects,
right?
In the range of $5 million as a separate resolution to go out to the voters. If we could have a discussion about that,
absolutely,
because it's a big number. It's much more than I anticipated. I was expecting some school buses, maybe some.
The buses were in there.
They were.
Yeah,
but there was also other things in there as well that kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit.
That's part of a bigger issue of capital projects. The architects are probably a week away from finalizing it, so we're going to bring this potential bond issue because we haven't done anything since 2008. Mm-hmm. Because of the lack of state aid and the tax cap. So we're putting together, like we did with the energy performance contract, no additional cost to the taxpayers, getting a major project done, leasing some of the equipment as opposed to buying it. Mm-hmm. So coming back with different financial plans. Prior to this, every few years we'd buy 3 or 4 school buses. We have 30. Now all of a sudden we need 15 school buses because we stopped buying for the last few years. Mm-hmm. So our children are riding around in older technology. Buses are improving every year. So, and it's not to buy all the buses at 1 year. It's to phase them back in.
So we get a more detailed understanding.
Absolutely. We'll have to probably devote a substantial part of the initial 14-15 budget just to this, the building repair and new equipment. But as they finalize it, actually Mike and Vinny and Ed, they've been spending a major part of their last 2-3 weeks, last month, with the architects. Mike, I would say another week you'll be done with the building portion of it.
You said next Thursday.
Next Thursday. Okay.
Doug?
Yeah, I just wanted to this is going to be my last meeting for a while, and while I'm gone, there will be a couple of key issues talked about. One, the Facilities Committee, from my understanding, is presenting at the next board meeting. And, of course, there'll be the budget. And I just wanted to put a couple thoughts out there ahead of time because, obviously, I won't be here to weigh in when they're discussed. With the Facilities Committee, I'm not sure what the presentation is. I haven't seen anything with it. But I know I personally could not support any sort of closing or consolidating anything at the secondary level. Because we don't have an enrollment problem at the secondary level. We have an enrollment problem at the elementary level. I graduated in 05 with about 1,200 kids. We're down this year to the incoming kindergarten class of less than 900. It shouldn't really take a rocket scientist to figure out that, there's a problem at the elementary with our enrollment. I would support the closing of a school or two schools at the elementary but I would not support any closing of anything at the secondary, and I would not support a budget that includes closing at the secondary. And when it comes to the budget, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the voters have sent us a message: stick to the tax cap. And I know I could not, when I come back, support a budget that was above the tax cap. I think they've been pretty clear that we need to stick to the tax cap, and it would appear, based on the early information we're getting, that there might be some more incentive for us to stick to the tax cap, potentially, based on what the governor is saying. So those are just a few things I wanted to get out there before I left, so everyone knows exactly where I stand before I leave.
Okay. I understand that the whole budget and the whole potential consolidation of anything within the district is really going to lie on what the state aid is this year, you know, and it's what it comes down to.
And Rob, that's exactly where I disagree with you, because to me it's not about saving money, it's about efficiency. If you have 12 buildings that used to house incoming kindergarten classes of 1,200, and now we have 874, give or take, that to me says that we need to consolidate, that we don't need 12 elementary schools. So I see if we don't close anything, we're just punting the problem down on the company.
And I understand it, Doug. And I think there's going to be a whole discussion, and certainly the input from our assistant superintendents and our superintendents is going to play a big part in the direction in which the board goes. So rather than having the entire discussion, I don't want to debate it with you. Okay.
I
want to hear the presentation and certainly the plausible options, and then certainly input from our people who we pay to do those jobs, and it's what it comes down to. And then if the board has to, or if the board majority chooses to then close a school or consolidate a school, then that's what the direction of the board will be given to administration. You know, so I respect your. You know, your concerns, opinions, certainly we'll update you, okay, on everything. You'll still receive packets. I don't know if you'll have access to email while you're away. You won't, okay? But once again, I mean, we're a little ways away from that decision, if that's what the board chooses to do. All right. Any other future discussion items? Dorothy?
Paul? I just have a question about the guidance handbook. I didn't get a chance to compare it from last year to this year, the one that just came out. Are there any significant changes in it? Or you don't have to answer me now. If you want to just give us.
I think we added.
Was there something in there that I didn't see?
There's updated information regarding the NCAA requirements, minor revisions for the department for the business and career development program. There's the Department of Family and Consumer Sciences that was in addition to the Human Services Internship course. And the Physical Education course, we had a switch of a title we added the Lifestyle course for grades 11 and 12. It used to be for grade 12 only.
Okay. So there were no changes as far as any AP classes or that you're
at
not
this,
putting in?
You're absolutely. I missed AP physics class. My apologies. So, send a revision.
Okay.
And that'll be also updated on the website.
Okay. Is that the only thing? If there is anything else, you can just
I will let you know.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Any other future discussion items? Mike?
Just a comment for those who might not have heard Doug's comments before. He's leaving Sunday to join the military, so we wish you good luck. Godspeed.
Okay. Our next scheduled meeting is for January 22nd here at 7:30 p.m. This time, I need a motion to go into executive session to discuss personal matters pertaining to the safety, health, and wellness of a employee. Sal Trippi, second. Terry Ahern, any all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.